First today, the chicken. That's right. These days, having a chicken for dinner is more than routine. But in ancient cultures, they were seen as showpieces and viewed as sacred. No less a personage than Socrates spent his last breath talking about them. Journalist Andrew Lawler has traced their journey across the globe for his new book, Why Did the Chicken Cross the World? He joins us now by Skype from North Carolina. Andrew, nice to have you. Good morning.
Hi, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, the chicken once was a more exotic animal than our listeners might think. Where did it come from?
Well, most people probably could tell you that the wolf is the origin of the domesticated dog that we have as a pet,
okay.
But probably few people could tell you exactly where the chicken came from. And I myself didn't know that till I began to research this.
I've never thought about it before, Andrew, just for the record.
Yeah, the red jungle fowl is an obscure bird that lives in South Asia. It's kind of a pheasant, lives all the way from India to Indonesia. And this is the bird that the chicken, in fact, all chickens on Earth, whether they're a tiny little bantam or your big Rhode Island hen, are descended from.
Why did it become so revered, you know, in South Asian cultures?
Well, one of the most astounding things that I discovered was that the chicken was not domesticated for its meat or for its eggs. It's pretty astonishing considering mm-hmm. that it's the world's greatest source of protein today. But archaeologists and anthropologists today believe that the chicken actually was domesticated first for ritual purposes. Much like bulls were used for bullfighting, roosters were used for cockfighting in Southeast Asia, and it's still very much a part of ritual in that part of the world today.
Well, the Greeks also had a thing for chickens by the time of Socrates. What did chickens mean to them?
The Greeks, they believed that chickens had a special line to the heavens, that they were in touch with the gods in a way that a lot of other animals were not. So they considered the chicken to be extremely sacred. If you were sick, for example, you would want to sacrifice a chicken in order to get better. In fact, Asclepius, who was the Greek god of medicine, had the rooster as well as the snake as his sacred animal. So these were animals that were sacrificed on a regular basis in order to get well. It wasn't just about chicken soup.
So that would explain why Socrates was talking about chickens when he took his last breath.
Well, there's a lot of debate about what he meant when he told his friend Crito, these were his last words, I owe a cock to Asclepius, please pay the debt. And scholars are debating still what he meant by that. Some think it was just a joke he was saying, take a chicken and sacrifice it. Others believe that it was actually a sign that the chicken was an important part of Greek life and that Socrates was wanting to do good by the gods. And others believe it was a dirty joke about the cock, which, of course, even in Greek times was considered a stand-in for the human male organ.
Huh. Well, you talk about the chicken being used for ritualistic purposes. When did folks from different cultures around the world begin seeing chicken for protein and for good food?
Well, you could probably point to the Romans. The Romans, they loved a good roast chicken, and they were really the first people to come up with a modern way of farming chickens, raising them in large numbers, 50 to 100 a flock. And they actually wrote several books about how you can raise chickens. But at the same time, the Romans, like the Greeks, considered the chicken to be quite sacred. In fact, no Roman general or admiral would go into battle without first consulting the sacred chickens that they kept nearby. If they ate a certain special bread that would be thrown to them, that was a sign you were going to win the battle. If they refused to eat, that was a sign that you ought to back off. So, chickens actually were an important part of Roman policy during the empire.
Well, it was the Romans, too, I think, who came up with this notion that chicken soup is the best medicine. Did they originate that one, too?
Well, they were one of the early ancient peoples to use the chicken. The chicken was essentially a walking medicine chest. Today, as I mentioned, we think of chicken as maybe chicken soup. But at the time, almost any part of the chicken could be used to cure any number of illnesses, whether your child was a bedwetter or whether you had a relative who was schizophrenic, There was always some kind of cure that came from a chicken part or from the egg.
Now, eggs are used a lot in vaccine production. So, which came first as a remedy, the chickens or their eggs?
I knew you would ask that question. Well, probably both, because obviously chickens and eggs go together. And the egg, for example, is still used in some traditional cultures to prevent burns from getting worse, although that's been shown not to be very effective in scientific studies. So chicken and eggs were both seen as important parts of medicinal use in the ancient world and even in today. I mean, most people still have grandmothers who say it's time for you to eat your chicken soup, you're getting stuffed up. And the scientific studies have shown that, in fact, the combination of chicken meat and vegetables does provide relief from many of the symptoms of the common cold.
Oh, that's interesting. We're visiting with journalist Andrew Lawler. As you can tell, he knows his chickens. His new book, Why Did the Chicken Cross the World? He's joining us from North Carolina this morning. If you have a question about chickens of any kind, we've got the right guy for you. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. You can also tweet us at KCUR up to date. Well, how closely does the chicken, Andrew, that I get these days at the grocery store resemble the chickens that you might have found in China a few thousand years ago?
Well, it's quite a different creature. The chicken today is the most engineered animal on earth. It is extremely different from what the ancients were eating. I mean, today, the chicken that most of us will buy in the grocery store is actually the result of a scientific project, kind of a Manhattan Project for poultry that took place in around 1950. And at that point, after World War II, the chicken industry was trying to maintain its market share with pigs and cows being the competitors. So they came up with a chicken that could produce a very large breast using very little feed over a short period of time. And this completely revolutionized the poultry industry and also changed the way the chicken looked. So the chickens actually look quite different. They have this ungainly breast now. Their legs are very short, not really designed to carry that kind of weight. So while we've been able to produce a bird that can make more meat for us, it doesn't necessarily taste better. And there certainly are a lot of issues associated with the health of chickens as a result.
Hey, are there issues with that? Should we be aware of those kinds of things?
Well, one of my most surprising, actually shocking finds was that the chicken is not considered an animal if it is grown for food. Now, even pigs and cows have at least some rudimentary laws that protect them. But chickens somehow have escaped that. There is a loophole that allows chickens to be considered as not live creatures, unless they're used in, say, scientific experiments or in a zoo or in a circus. But if chickens are grown for food, there are actually no standards to regulate their welfare. And I think that is something that we should keep in mind when we choose chicken. You know, part of the reason why chicken is so cheap is because there are no welfare rules that require certain amounts of space for broilers, for example.
Huh. Well, you spend a lot of time studying chickens, clearly, Andrew. Do you still eat chicken?
I have to say that I do. It is a convenient food. And as an American, I find it very difficult to find other choices. And partly my concern is that I don't have a lot of choice. Most Americans don't have a lot of choice when it comes to chicken. Most of the chickens that we can buy are industrial chickens. The chicken that is a result of the Chicken of Tomorrow project I mentioned earlier. And what I would like to see is greater variety. I would like to see chickens grown in all kinds of different ways with animal welfare taken into account, with their taste taken into account, because that chicken we get with that big fat breast is often very dry. And that's why we have to spend all this time putting things into it, like marinades and spices, because it's pretty tasteless. So I would like, as a consumer, to see more choice.
Well, given how popular the chicken is, why aren't we getting that choice?
That's a good question. I think a lot of it is that it's a race to the bottom. You know, how cheap can you produce chicken? And we as Americans have opted for cheap meat, and the chicken is the cheapest of meat. So partly it's economic. But I think once people can grasp the welfare issues and the taste issues, they can begin to demand better chicken. And there are some small companies that are beginning to do this. There's some that import eggs from France and grow them in a European style. These are birds that genetically aren't like the modern industrial chicken and actually taste much more delicious, although they cost slightly more. But I think as companies jump in and begin to address this need for more kinds of chickens, I think we'll see a lot more choice in the supermarket.
Now, what do your friends ask you, Andrew, about studying and writing a book about chickens? They give you a hard time about that, or are they cool with it?
Well, let's put it this way. I've heard a lot of chicken stories. And if there's something about chickens that people relate to. And although I'm not a farmer, I don't keep chickens. My travel schedule really doesn't allow it. But I think chickens are something that humans, going back millennia, have identified with. They tend to hang around the house. If you have them, they'll be right outside. You throw your scraps out the back door. And this is something that's been going on and still goes on throughout the world. So I think we have a relationship to chickens as animals that is really unique, that is very different, say, from cats and dogs or cows and pigs, which tend to be, placed farther away from a home. So chickens, I think, give us a chance to connect with nature and to understand our food sources and to understand, how nature works. So chickens are a really good way to learn about how we live as humans.
That's the voice of Andrew Lawler. Again, his new book, Why Did the Chicken Cross the Road? We're talking about chickens and their journeys across the globe. This Manhattan-style project you mentioned that came around maybe after World War II, you mentioned the chicken industry was desperate to gain more market share. What was that project like? I mean, how scientific was it? What kind, how many people were involved in trying to develop a better chicken?
Well, let me set the stage. During World War II, pork and beef were reserved for the troops. So most Americans had to eat chicken instead. And that was something that was new. Most Americans had been eating pork and beef primarily. So at the end of World War II, when rationing ceased to exist, the industry was really concerned that people would go back to their old ways. So they had a very clever idea. It was actually a man who worked for A&P, which was the Walmart of its day. It was a massive supermarket
Sure.
chain. And they decided, let's create a contest. So there was a contest around the country. Almost every state held a public contest to see what breeder could come up with a chicken that would produce a breast that could be carved like a steak. That was the goal. And they even had this fake rubber chicken that was the ideal chicken with that large breast that would be similar to what you would get in the supermarket for pork or beef. So the contest was very popular, and it was a vice president of the United States, long forgotten Alvin Barkley, who presented the award to a California farmer in 1952. That was to award the best, most modern, biggest breasted chicken that science had yet produced. And that is still the chicken. That chicken is still the one that we eat today. The genes have not changed very much since then.
Andrew, sometimes I'll just confess, I go into these conversations. I don't know what's going to come out of it, but this is very interesting. This is just amazing to me. Wendell writes us this: oh, when did chicken jokes become so popular?
That's a really great question. And I wondered, it's a why is the chicken considered such a stupid animal? Given all I learned about the past, where the chicken was respected in ancient Rome, where it was
Yeah.
seen as it was connected to the gods. Well, it's interesting. It really begins to happen in the 1920s and 30s. This is when phrases like, oh, you're a chicken, start to come into play. What I understand from talking to sociologists is that the chicken became more distant. It became an animal that was produced en masse far away from most Americans, who were by that time largely living in cities. So, the idea of chickens became not so much an animal you actually knew, but an animal you imagined or saw in cartoons. So the chicken became associated with a stupid bird, even though that is certainly not its history throughout most societies over the past several millennia. So it was really, I think, a result of the industrialization of the chicken.
But are they very smart?
Yes, I went to a fascinating laboratory in Italy where a scientist, a neuroscientist, is doing work on chicken intelligence. Now, it sounds kind of loony, But
a little.
Yeah, but yeah, he takes these chickens that are just out of the shell, that have just come out a day or two before. They've just hatched, and he performs a series of very simple experiments. And that gives them the choice of how to get food and how to move toward a light, etc. And what he found was that chickens have an incredibly well-developed innate sense of time, of logic, and of, you know, how to get what they want at a very early age. In fact, far earlier than human infants have that same ability.
Oh,
so really, chickens are quite tuned in, and I think our ideas about them being stupid is probably a way for us to feel better about eating them.
That's probably right. That's probably a very good point. Let's go to some phone calls at 816-235-2888. Alfred from up in Leavenworth, good morning.
Good morning. I was just in Southeast Asia and saw some jungle chickens out in the Montagnard villages. And you take one look at them and you know absolutely chickens descended from dinosaurs.
Because yes. Why, Alfred?
They look like little bitty dinosaurs.
Huh.
The nastiest looking thing you ever saw.
Huh.
Well, in fact, Elfin, you are absolutely correct. Recently, in the past few years, a scientific paper was published. A bone was found in Montana that belonged to a Tyrannosaurus rex. Scientists were able to extract a tiny bit of the cartilage from this bone, and when they analyzed it, they were able to pinpoint a specific protein that this Tyrannosaurus rex had in its body 30, 40 million years ago. That protein is identical to the proteins that you find in today's chicken. It was the first really clear physical evidence that chickens are, like other birds, descended directly from the dinosaurs. And if you've ever seen a cockfight, which of course are illegal and highly controversial, but it's clear that that bird is tremendously fierce. And I've no doubt that there's still a little bit of dinosaur in every chicken.
Yeah. Alfred, thanks for the call. It's a good one. I appreciate it. Yeah. Well, we're talking about Southeast Asia again. You know, different cultures value different features in a chicken. You know, how do our preferences here in the West compare to some of the preferences in Southeast Asian societies?
Well, Southeast Asia is the place where the chicken probably was originally domesticated. That's where you find the greatest variety of chickens. I went to Vietnam, northern Vietnam, in the mountains in the northwest part of the country, to see if I could learn more about both the red jungle fowl, which is native to that region, as well as the local varieties of chickens. And we went to a local restaurant. A Vietnamese official took us there, and I was astounded by the variety of chicken. I was served, for example, a black chicken. Not only is it black on the outside, black feathers, it had black meat, it had black bones, and even the blood was black. Even the comb of the rooster, which was cooked and served, was black. And this was considered the ultimate in chicken delicacy, because it's a bird that is supposed to give you great vitality. To me, it tasted very oily because I was raised on Kentucky Fried Chicken. I was raised on that industrial chicken that is white and very bland and doesn't have much taste at all. So it was very hard to get used to it. But I realized that there's so many different tastes of chicken that we as Americans have been deprived of.
Oh, that's interesting. Let's go back to some calls. Let me go to Bill from Overland Park. Bill, you're on Up to Date. Our guest, Andrew Lawler, his book, Why Did the Chicken Cross the World? Good morning.
Hi. When I was a kid, I've always loved animals. When I was a kid, I was down around Augusta, Kansas. My great-great-grandparents had a farm. And I took the time to teach one of the chickens in their chicken yard to jump up on my shoulder. And she became a pet. And I found it quite easy, actually. And unfortunately for her, she probably wound up at Sunday dinner because she made the mistake of jumping up on someone else's shoulder. So I've always been convinced that they are intelligent animals. And I'll listen off the air.
That's a great comment. I appreciate that, Bill. Let's go to Ann from Kansas City, Missouri, who wants to make a similar comment, I think. Ann, nice to have you.
Hi. I have a small backyard flock here in Kansas City, and I just wanted to say, echo that comment that I've taught my chickens several hand signals, and several know their names, and They're just wonderful pets. We also use them for eggs, but they're getting a little older now, so more pets now.
All right. And thank you very much for the call. Nice to have you.
You know, I should probably mention the backyard chicken movement has really gathered force in the past few years. And, you know, more and more people are seeing the chicken, as I mentioned earlier, as a way to connect with nature, as well as to produce the daily egg that makes the chicken so unique. So it's a fascinating movement which has spread across so many cities. There have been massive battles over allowing chickens in backyards. And for the most part, it's the chicken lovers that are triumphing.
Oh, you see them around town here all the time. You know, you mentioned cockfighting a few minutes ago. How far back does that go in human history, and where are we with that today?
Well, cockfighting, as probably the origin of chicken domestication, goes back certainly thousands of years. The evidence that we have from archaeologists comes primarily from, say, maybe the 6th, 7th century BC, so maybe 2,500 years ago or more. Certainly it was happening in the Middle East. There are examples of chickens with roosters that have that bit of their, that spur, which is a bit of bone that sticks out, which they used to attack other chickens. So it was wildly popular for religious reasons, and then as entertainment and gambling. In fact, I went to the World Slasher Cup, which is the Super Bowl of cockfighting.
Wow.
Takes place every year in Manila, where it is still legal. It's considered a traditional sport in the Philippines. And it was fascinating to see the thousands and thousands of people that are there gambling. Of course, in the United States and many other countries, it is now illegal, primarily for animal cruelty purposes, to prevent the cruelty. But actually, when it first became illegal in Victorian England, it was because a lot of women did not approve of their men mixing with men of other classes in these cockfighting gambling dens. That was the origin of cockfighting being outlawed.
Was that hard to watch in the Philippines or not?
Well, I wondered, since I'd never been to a cockfight before. And you know, it was fascinating. It was in a giant arena with big screens, two chickens per match, 600 matches over the course of a week or so. And it was, at first, it was appalling. And then, I have to admit, I began to kind of get into the swing of things. When there are thousands of people who are all participating, I became kind of curious about which bird is going to win. And only one bird generally comes out of that ring alive. It is a winner-take-all kind of event.
Wow. Well, again, Andrew Lawler is the author of Why Did the Chicken Cross the Road? And Andrew, you were just terrific. You made that topic come alive, and it was just a pleasure to have you. Thanks so much.
Thanks, and always enjoy talking chicken.